So, Amy, you guys are kind of a pet and animal family, or at least you have been, right?
Yes. I mean, I like animals.
Okay. So, what kinds of pets have you had in your lifetime?
Okay, so we've had fish. Can we just say that that's the least exciting pet possible?
Do they really count?
I mean, they're nice to watch. We constantly forgot to feed ours, so
Oops.
That was problematic. If it's not like a little furry thing that's begging for food, it's hard to
So
remember.
you had lots of fish that got
Yeah.
flushed, huh?
Yes, we got really good at that. We had dogs. Of course, we didn't have cats because Barry's so allergic. I was trying to think if we had anything weird. The weirdest thing my kids wanted is, I can't remember which one, came home from school and their teacher had a gecko. They wanted a gecko so badly. So I started researching geckos and I quickly said, no. You know why?
Why?
Because geckos outlive you.
Ew.
I know, like I thought, well, if it's a lizard that lives like 3 years or something, I can deal with that. But these things live like 90 years, 100 years. They're kind of like parrots. If you get one, you have to have it written into your will. So I was like, no way. And then one of my sons dated a girl that had a boa constrictor. And I was like, dude, not the girl for you. But anyway, how about you guys?
So would we be still friends if I told you that I would have a rosy boa constrictor if Daniel didn't hate snakes so badly?
Really? Do tell. What do you love about a rosy boa constrictor? What is a rosy boa constrictor?
It's a very, very big snake, and I actually prefer big snakes to little snakes just because they're easier to manage. I think I learned to handle snakes when I was a kid, and my brother came home with two garter snakes and he like held them up to me, and I suddenly realized I had a choice. If I freaked out, he would be able to torment me for the rest of my life. And if I did what I actually did in that moment, it would deflate him. And so I reached out and with my mouth, I forced my mouth open and said, "Oh, how cute." And I reached out and grabbed one of them and pretended to like it. And the weird thing is, I ended up actually kind of liking snakes. And so our weirdest pet was when Anne Marie wanted to get I think we got her a corn snake, and Daniel didn't want one in the house. And so this
Ah.
is not a good parenting tip, and this is not a good marriage tip at all. So don't tell anybody. Like, listeners, quit listening now. I went behind his back and I took her to a pet store, and we got the aquarium and we got the hot rock and everything. And so the person checking us out asked what we were going to name the snake, and Anne Marie hadn't decided yet. And I said, "Well, when we get home, your father's going to have a hissy fit." And so that's when she named the snake. She named it Hissy Fit.
Goodness. Okay. So we obviously are pet people. We love pets. So today's conversation is really going to be fun.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking with Jen Bleakley, author of Pawverbs, 100 Inspirations to Delight an Animal Lover's Heart. Jen is also the author of Joey, How a Blind Rescue Horse Helped Others Learn to See. A former child and family grief counselor and a children's curriculum writer. When Jen is not typing away on her beat-up computer, you can find her spending time with her talented software engineer woodworking husband, her two growing children, and her very needy golden retriever, who's my favorite on Instagram. She and her family live in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Many of us believe a house isn't a home unless there is fur on the floor. Pawverbs, a collection of 100 short stories featuring real-life animals, presents the godly wisdom of Proverbs in a whimsical way, inviting us to explore deep spiritual truths alongside tales of our lovable pets.
In this book, you will meet guinea pig sisters with celebrity status,
a street-smart cat who finds his way home,
a black lab with a rap sheet,
a dog and a dolphin who are best friends,
a bearded dragon who enjoys a good soak,
a life-saving Great Dane, and many more.
Like little fuzzy, hairy, scaly, or feathery ambassadors, animals are a gift from God to point us to Himself, to the one who promises to never leave us, is always available to listen, and who loves us more than we can fathom.
If you are looking for encouragement and inspiration, or even just a kibble-sized morsel of wisdom, Pawverbs is sure to delight your pet-loving soul.
Jim, we're so excited to have you here today. I'm especially excited. I got to read an early copy of your book and I'm so crazy about it. What prompted you to write a book that brings together the Book of Proverbs and stories of animals?
Thank you so much for having me. I've often said that animals are my love language. I know that's not one of the original five, but I really think it should be.
Yes.
And so even as a painfully shy little girl that found it very difficult to speak to adults, even kids my own age, I was able to talk to animals. So animals have always had a special place in my heart and allowed me to learn kind of at my own pace, even social skills. Honestly, the most important lessons they taught me were things about God. And so even as a young child, I've learned from animals and I've related to animals. And so after writing my first book, Joey, which was a true story of how God worked through an animal, a horse, to help people see hope, you know, it just really ignited that childlike passion that I had for animals and started seeing attributes of God and lessons all around me. And we, at the time, had a puppy. And for those who have raised puppies, there's a lot of opportunities to see some life lessons. And at the time, our pastor was going through a series in Proverbs. And we were just having conversations with our kids about like foolish and wise behavior. And unfortunately, our puppy was cast in the role of the fool, you know, far too many times. But it was such a practical way to teach our children some of these spiritual truths that we were learning in Proverbs. And so it really started as stories for my kids. And then after writing Joey and talking with an editor, it kind of morphed into what the book became, which is just these short stories featuring animals, just doing what animals do, but then the lessons that we can learn from them. And I just tied it to Proverbs because that is such a practical book. I like to call it like wisdom nuggets. My kids are also big chicken nugget fans. And so I feel like Proverbs is really like nuggets of wisdom. And I'm a big fan of puns. And so I couldn't resist the title Proverbs.
I was going to ask who came up with the title. Was that your idea?
Yeah, back when there were just stories for my kids and it was a mama puppy and or mama dog and her little puppies. And it's always been Proverbs.
Props, serious props. Okay.
Thank you.
I love puns. So how does Proverbs relate to your first book, Joey, which we are both huge fans of? How does Proverbs relate to that book?
It's basically the same concept, like whereas Joey was just one big cohesive story about the ways that people learned something about God through the horse, how they saw the light of hope through Joey's life. It was really how God worked through this one horse in probably hundreds of ways. And then Proverbs is really 100 short stories. So it shows us lessons that we can learn once again from animals, but this time it's just short stories, but there's 100 of them. And we feature, you know, lots of different animals in the book. And there is one story of a horse. So the horse made it into the book as well. We tried not to be super technical that you had to have paws to make it in the book. So we have some hooves and some scales and some feathers, you know.
So awesome.
Yeah, it was born. I feel like Proverbs was kind of born from Joey. I just wanted to keep going. So many people, so many readers of Joey were so kind to share with me stories from their own lives of lessons that they had learned, either through a horse or through another animal. So it just felt like the next logical step.
Okay, so I'm going to go off script here and I'm going to ask, just a spoiler alert, how many of those 100 stories end with the animal dying? I just need to know.
None of the animals die in the book. There might be one, Scram, where I think that dog does die. The one that made me cry is it's about a bird named Bobby and a dog named Buddy. And Buddy was 16 years old when he died. And the bird is a macaw on the ones that talk. And the macaw had learned Karen, the owner's, whistle for Buddy. So when the bird got bored, the bird would call for Buddy and the dog would go run in the room and like they would play like they were friends. And so after 16 years, the dog dies. 3 years ago is when Buddy died. To this day, Karen said every day, Bobby the bird whistles for Buddy to come.
Oh my gosh, I don't share in that instant tears.
So I'm just like, for the love. So I wrote that story and I had to step away, you know, twice writing that. And the woman, she's a friend, but she was my Sunday school teacher from childhood. So I love her and I love her heart. That one was a little hard, but there's nothing like a speckle of stuff.
So it's safe.
I want to just, as an aside, also one of the things I kept thinking when I was reading Proverbs is how wonderful this would be for family devotions, because kids love animals so much. I mean, it's for adults also, but kids love pets so much. And like you said, you used it for stories. And so if our listeners have grandchildren or children in their lives, this is a wonderful book for that. So natural ways to teach spiritual lessons. Yeah.
There you go.
So we're talking about the death of animals. So that kind of transitions into this question, but you worked as a grief counselor before eventually becoming a writer. Do you find yourself using your counseling training and how you write and work now?
You know, I do. And that was one of the sweetest surprises in all of this, because I'll be honest, I only worked for a couple years as a grief therapist before my husband, his job, you know, there was a job relocation and I was pregnant at the time. And so I just ended up, by God's grace, able to stay home with my kids. And I'd always kind of question, like, Lord, what was that? You know, like I really felt like he had called me into that line of work and I loved it. And I met some of the most precious people. I feel like they taught me infinitely more than I could have possibly offered them. But my counseling background is what led me to Hope Brains, because a friend who was a social worker, she and I were both raising kids and weren't working in the traditional sense with our counseling degree. And she was on the board at the time of Hope Brains. And she's like, you know, with your background, it might be a good place for you to volunteer. And she knew I was just kind of a little restless, just wanting to do something. And she didn't know that I had zero horse experience. And so, you know, I could greet people and say hi, but that's what brought me out there. And that was the night I met Joey. And so even just how God orchestrated that, but then in talking with people, I really use that background, draw from that background, because it's all about helping people tell their story. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge aspect of Joey. And, you know, spoiler alert for Joey, he's not still with us. And so calling to interview his past owners and people that had loved him, it was almost like doing grief therapy to let them know he's not still here and to let them process that. And then because the book does touch on grief, being able to draw from that. And then with Proverbs, just collecting stories, being able to actively listen to people, to just invite them and honestly to honor their story and just to treat it with respect and to treat it carefully. So yes, I'm so grateful for that background in counseling. And it definitely makes a little more sense now.
Well, your storytelling is done with so much heart and compassion. Mm-hmm. So your counseling shows through in really beautiful ways.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So how do you see animals being part of our mental health and or our spiritual health?
You know, in so many ways. There's a fundamental rule or principle, I guess, in grief counseling that is really why grief counselors exist. And it's that in times of grief, you have an increased need to be understood, but a decreased ability to be understanding. And that sums up why grief counseling exists, is that when you're going through grief, you desperately want to be understood, but you're exhausted emotionally and psychologically, and it's almost impossible in some cases to extend that understanding to someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where some of our animals can enter in. And you know, even just an animal's willingness to sit with you and to listen. Sometimes, you know, I often felt so bad. Well, I didn't feel bad getting paid because, you know, I was working, but I'm like, all I'm doing is listening to people. They don't need me to do anything for them. They just needed someone to just listen and understand. And I worked a lot with parents and children. And a lot of times, you know, one is trying to protect the other. And so just to really be raw, to let yourself feel and process. And animals are fantastic listeners, and they don't tell our secrets, you know? And so I think even just from that viewpoint of having a listening ear, but then you add to that companionship, I mean, I feel like with this pandemic, just the fact that we have these little furry, feathery, scaly companions is wonderful, a wonderful gift. The ability to take care of another living creature. I think oftentimes the fastest way to heal is to take care of someone else, even if that someone else has a fur coat. So I think there's many different ways that animals can help us heal or offer support, which is why I think it's just one of God's kindnesses to sprinkle so many animals on this planet.
Absolutely. Well, and it's so funny because this series is all about relationships this season. And sometimes, you know, I think we kind of minimize, there's this whole cultural weirdness, like we're obsessed with our animals, but you don't want to prioritize them too much. That, you know, right. What I mean? And so it's fun to be talking about the depth of relationship that we have with our animals and how God uses them in our lives.
Yeah.
So although Proverbs is a part of the Bible, many see it as a universal source of wisdom. So what are some of the main lessons you learned from reading Proverbs and writing Proverbs?
I think really one of the biggest lessons is that God is the source of wisdom, and that it is, to kind of sound like a proverb, it is folly to look for wisdom somewhere else. And so I think that has really become one of the fundamental lessons, that true wisdom comes from God, and just the need to turn to Him, to turn to His word, to look to Him to be that author and creator of life and of wisdom, and keeping our eyes on Him, even when we stumble, even when we don't get it right, to continue to go back to Him has really been just an incredibly powerful kind of overarching theme for me in all of Proverbs. And I will say, it gets really hard to keep Proverbs and Proverbs separate. I can't tell you how many times I've told someone, just turn to Proverbs chapter.
Proverbs. Yeah, when I said it together, I was like, I even thought, did I say that right?
You gotta think about it, right?
Gotta slow it down.
But I think the other thing, and it's another pun, and I think God just speaks to me sometimes in puns. I'm so grateful. But the whole pause and ponder and pause and pray, which of course in the book, you know, at the end of each story, I have a pause, P-A-W-S, and ponder and pause and pray. But the idea that when reading Proverbs, I used to have a tendency to just kind of power through it. Like, let me just read a bunch at a time. But then writing the book and just sitting with one tiny little section, sometimes not even a whole verse, sometimes just focusing on one section of the verse, really helped me see truths in new ways, just slowing down, which is another gift I think animals give us, is helping us learn to just slow down.
Oh, I always tell people I'm a dog person and a cat convert. And right now we've got an orange tabby and named Rafiki in my Facebook feed has nothing but Rafiki pictures. And he does. He'll get on me and he'll need me with his little paws because he thinks I'm his mama. And I'm paralyzed. I can't move. And, you know, we know in our family, if somebody's got a cat on them, they pretty much have to be waited on, because until the cat decides to move, you know. But that's that. I did not grow up with that at all. So it's been learning to pause. And then Amy has been here, so she knows that Rafiki's purr. You can literally hear his purr across the room. And it is the most comforting sound. Like, it'll dial me down.
And he purrs in his sleep, Jen. He's the happiest cat.
All right. So how can pets and animals point us to God and His love and His truth?
It's so many ways. I feel like another one of God's kindnesses is the fact that we can discover some of His attributes and His heart through these animals. And, you know, whereas someone might have been really hurt by another person, or especially someone in the church, and maybe they have a hard time, maybe they're in a season where it's just difficult for them to hear truth from another person. Just how kind of God to imprint some of His attributes and qualities in an animal. And so a dog lying with you, their companionship or their loyalty, their unconditional love, a cat's natural curiosity and creativeness, because our cats can be somewhat creative in what they choose to do, and the birds, how they just do what God intended them to do, the song that they're always singing, or how they're always gathering. And there's just so much that if we'll look at it and look past the surface and pause and ponder and really consider we can learn so much about the heartbeat of God himself through the animals that he created. And of course, we as humans are his image bearers, but I think he's given us little clues to himself in the animals that he's surrounded us. The power of a lion, which I know, I don't think anyone has a pet lion. Maybe they do, and more power to them. But it's just fascinating to me to really look and see what you can discover about God from the animals. I consider them kind of like his ambassadors of grace and his kindness and some of his attributes. And so I feel like there's so much. And the Bible talks a lot about animals, from telling us to look at the ant and consider his ways, and the fact that Jesus rode in on a mama donkey and her little baby. You know, there's just so many stories of animals in the Bible too. So I think there's a reason why God wants us to look to them.
Well, you've just mentioned this wide variety of pets and animals, and a lot of this variety made it into the book. But we want to know, what was the weirdest pet or animal that made its way into Proverbs?
I feel like the one that will probably surprise the most people, actually, there's two. They're both in the reptile family. And I once upon a time swore I would never have reptiles in our house. And then we had kids. So we have a bearded dragon in our family. His name is Captain Tim. And I can't say I have a lot of affection towards him, but I appreciate him. He made it in the book, and as did a leopard gecko. So there is a leopard spotted gecko, and we kind of jokingly refer to him as the prodigal gecko because he escaped his tank and went on a 4-month joyride through the neighborhood only to be found alive, which is incredible to me. So I would say probably the reptiles. There's bunnies and squirrels, a horse, dogs, and cats. There is a dolphin in the book, which I love dolphins. Dogs and dolphins are my two most favorite animals. And so there's a story of a dog and a dolphin that are best friends, which I think is just incredible.
How fun.
Well, and I wanted to tell people that you should buy Proverbs, but you should also follow Jen on Instagram because I have fallen in love with Gracie. Tell us about Gracie.
Thank you for saying that. Yes, Gracie is our current golden retriever. And in fact, I had to kind of sequester her to another room or she would be right in the middle of all of this. So she is 3 years old and a treasure trove of stories. She's made an appearance on all the stuff for Proverbs, and she has her own Instagram page as well as popping in mine. She's been keeping a journal. She started it when we first got the stay-at-home order. She's not that consistent on posting, but she kind of shares her canine perspective on
She has quite amazing insights. So yes, she does.
She does. Kind of like childlike wisdom, you know? Although she also ate my earbuds, which is why I'm wearing headphones. So we kind of balance Gracie's foolish and wise side of Proverbs.
All right, that cracks me up. So Jen, what is your hope for readers of Proverbs?
I think my biggest hope is that in reading this collection of stories, people will find comfort. They will find a little bit of joy, and that they will find hope. That if God has a purpose for a gecko, surely he has a purpose for us. And I feel like right now, with the way the world is, we could all use some therapy animals. And I feel like Proverbs offers 100 little therapy animals that are willing to come sit right beside you and help you pause and ponder who God is and who we are to him, and just so many other really powerful and yet simple lessons.
We hope you've enjoyed episode 209 of Grit and Grace, the podcast.
Listeners, we're so grateful that you join us each and every week.
And we're so grateful to Tyndale Momentum for their sponsorship of this week's episode.
Check out the webpage at gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode209. There you'll find this week's transcript, a link to order Proverbs, 100 Inspirations to Delight an Animal Lover's Heart, and the brand new Proverbs for a Dog Lover's Heart, inspiring stories of friendship, fun, and faithfulness. Also, we'll provide a link to Jen's website.
Join us next week when we'll be processing what we've learned from our conversation with Jen.
For today, grow your grit.
Embrace God's grace.
And as God reveals the next step to live your one life well,
we'll be cheering you on. So
take it.